This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Welcome to a Joycast from Joy 94.9. Visit joy.org.au to find out more about our Joycasts.
We were decoys. He used us as bait. We procured for him.
We could have had a good life together. Fucking real good life. But you didn't want it, Ennis. So what we got now is Brokeback Mountain.
You are listening to Outtakes, the home of queer cinema on Joy 94.9. And tonight, the home of queer TV, as we celebrate the release of Transparent Season 4. We're also looking at how Transparent has changed the landscape of trans representation on screen. But what we're really doing is paying homage to this remarkable series.
How many are we?
It's 1, 2, 3.
Oh, hello.
And then we got Sarah.
Oh,
hey. We have Laura.
How many of us are we?
I'm going to order.
Hi. Yeah. Sorry, I'm late.
All my life, I knew I had a missing piece.
I mean, how often does one get to date life?
Your energy is literally like there's a gas fire in the kitchen right now.
What is that?
It's miracle marijuana and this delicious cute little gummy bear.
I was just gonna have you eat the head.
You're gonna be so high.
Why do you want to do this every week?
What? No,
family is gross, but it's important.
Alan, Gina, isn't it the most remarkable series?
Well, that last line, families are gross, but important. And sums up this whole series.
Well, that's what this is about. This is a series about family. I mean, it's a series about a lot of things, and as the title suggests, this is a series about trans issues. But it's also about being transparent. It's about being your true self.
Yes, and it's not pretty, our true self sometimes, and that's what this family likes to celebrate.
Well, this family isn't pretty, but no. They're lovable for that. I mean, Gina, you and I were talking before.
This is like every family.
I think it is. It certainly is. Yeah.
Well, Gina, you and I were talking before about how it takes remarkable writing to make us hate characters, but also to make us love them.
It goes against everything. I know emerging writers are frightened to do. You don't want anyone to dislike your characters. Oh God, no! You know, it's such a skill, and it's such new writing to see stuff like this. So when Jill Soloway first created this, very rarely do you turn on a series and have so many antagonists. You know, do you have so many characters that you
But
just,
would we call you know, them antagonists?
Well, they almost are to each other in this entire, you know, this whole dysfunctional family. You know, you love them and you hate them all at the same time.
Yeah.
It's quite a skill to get us to follow this journey.
You know, controversially, isn't that what family is?
Oh,
like,
God, yeah.
you know what the people in your family, you know what their biggest flaws are, and yet you love them anyway. And
well,
the same most of the time.
I bring you in on that one, do we?
Absolutely.
Yeah,
absolutely
true.
You do. You know, that's what family is. You stick together through thick and thin.
Yeah.
You know, good and bad. So,
family should have separated a long time ago. And yet we're here for season 4.
You know, the funny thing is, though, Gina, when you say that, you know, sometimes they're likable and sometimes they're hateful.
Yeah.
But, you know, I did not find that. I love these characters. I love them all. I think they're great.
Oh, look, they're all destructive, though, and messy in their own way.
Self-obsessed.
That's what I like about it, because it's so real.
This is real.
This is what
it's
we're
authentic.
Really like when we take our masks off.
That's really why it works, because this is a show about being your true self, about being your real self, and these characters are very real. Now the series follows a family of five, led by Maura Pfefferman, who is a trans woman, and it's really her journey of self-discovery that I think acts as the impetus for the journeys of self-discovery trajectory that everyone else in this family goes on, including her ex-wife, played by Judith Light. And I think Shelley Pfefferman is one of the most lovable and also hateable characters on TV, but also their three children, Ali, Sarah and Josh. And they really are a dysfunctional but lovable family.
Ali, though,
Oh, well, she's the least lovable of all of them, isn't she?
I'm happy to vote that she, for me, is the least lovable. And I think in this current season, yeah.
So, look, tonight on Outtakes, we are going Transparent Gaga, and we want you to go Transparent Gaga with us. Message in, let us know who your favourite member of the Pfefferman clan is.
You say Pfefferman so well, I'll practice all night. Message in on 0427JOY949 or email us on air at joy.org.au.
Or you could also tell us which your favourite dysfunctional family on TV is.
So many to choose from. What about yours, Ellen?
Dysfunctional family? You know, I'm really struggling to try and think of a dysfunctional
Cosby's
family.
Cosby's now when we look back at history, but I won't go there.
Too far. Are we there yet? I don't know. Look, this really is a series about the individual journeys that these characters go on, but also the way that those journeys intersect with each other. And in many ways, this is also a series about intersectionality and about how different parts of us come together to... it is a series about intersectionality.
Look, it is. You'll have to please explain,
Daniel. Well, what is intersectionality?
Well, these are.
I don't know.
Okay. Well, let's break it down. Let's look at Moira. So, we are taken on a journey right through Moira's whole life. We see her develop as a character from day dot, and kind of develop as a Jewish male, and then get married and have children and struggle with trans identity and with feeling, realizing.
And sexuality. And that is touched on quite a bit in this current season, which we'll be talking about.
So there are all of these issues about gender, about race, about religion, about family, about sexuality, that all come together and all bubble up in all of these characters. So all of the characters, not just Moira, are grappling with all of these issues. And that's what makes it such a rich series. And that's what makes all of these characters so rich and so flawed, but so real, because we all struggle with all of these issues, and it's the rare series or TV show that actually takes us there and exposes each struggle and how they kind of fit together.
Oh my God, Daniel, you have just wrapped this whole series all in one. I mean, that's such a fantastic summation.
But what it also does is all of the characters have their secrets and they just get exposed and again and again. Every episode something is exposed to a member of the family in public and then, you know, how that kind of plays out.
I think we finally get to see Shelley's secret.
Ooh. Well, we thought that we saw Shelley's secret at the end of season three.
It hinted at it. I think it did hint, and we can't give spoilers. You need to watch this.
That moment that is the height of this series when Shelley exposes her secret.
Exposes her secret and exposes the selfishness of the family that never dared
but
ask
Shelley,
what her secret
it's so
was.
Funny because Shelley is one of the most selfish characters in this program, but she always exposes the selfishness of everyone else.
Because they're all self.
That's what mothers do really well.
Well,
isn't
it's funny you should say
do
that.
Do as I say, not as I do.
That comes up in this wonderful sequence. I think it's relatively early on in the series where obviously she's taken in by Josh in this series. She lives with Josh. She's no longer attached. Josh is the male in her life. She doesn't have a partner any longer. That provides a lot of the tension in their relationship. Yeah. At the question of boundaries, and indeed boundaries become, you know, we were speaking
it's the
before
theme.
The writers, you can imagine Jill Soloway sitting in a room with the word boundaries scrawled across a whiteboard, and everything comes back to this idea of boundaries.
Yes.
You don't listen.
I do so. I just heard you say you don't listen.
Okay, then you're a boundary pusher, okay?
You all talk about boundaries. I have no idea what boundaries are.
Boundaries are everything. You know, boundaries are how people tell other people what they need.
Exactly. It's like when you decided you were going to live here, but you never asked me.
I did so.
No, you said, Josh, I can stay here, right?
That That's asking.
It sounds a lot more like telling, but with a question mark.
Hey, you, stay out of it. You, I shouldn't have to ask, Mr. Sigmund Freud.
Okay. Yeah, I'm Sigmund Freud. I'm Sigmund Freud. All right. All right.
This is the way that I control my money and my way. Yes, it is.
No,
and
it's,
you know
Mom,
that.
You count toilet paper squares.
I don't like to waste.
No, it's OCD and it's mental illness is what it is.
Why do you hate me so much?
I don't. I care about you, and that's why I'm saying it to your face.
Oh, this is caring. This is very caring behavior. I do not feel safe right now.
I don't feel safe right now.
I also don't feel safe.
Please, please, stop being so mean to me.
Oh, my God.
Stop it, please. Yeah, stop treating me. I'm 68 years old.
Yeah, I'm trying to help you.
Can
I'm trying to
I
help
continue
you.
Living the way that I want to live?
Fine. I will not help you anymore.
Fine. That's fine.
I love that sequence. That is classic Shelley.
Look, Shelley has some amazing moments, especially when she kind of discovers interpretive dance during this latest season. And she embraces a character who I think she kind of did a bit of character study when she was in Who's the Boss with Tony.
Tony Danza.
Yeah, Tony. Yes. Yeah, was that his name?
Tony Danza.
Mm, where she embraces this kind of real chauvinistic kind of Italian gigolo male kind of thing. But it helps her get her way. So...
But I think this was also classic Josh, Gina. It was classic Josh as well, wasn't it, Gina, where he was very hurtful.
Yes.
You know, he thinks he's being honest and trying to be helpful, but in actual fact, he really goes straight for the jugular, doesn't he?
Oh, you know what? This one season, I have to admit, I find that every season, Josh especially, knows how to hurt people. But this one, other than that, you know, a couple moments with Mum, I think most of the characters have kind of taken a pill of do no harm and they do less harm on others. They harm themselves and each other, but they're not hurting as many innocent bystanders, which is what I usually come out of this season going, how many people have you just run over, you know, with, you know, your... terrible selfish behaviour on this journey.
Do you think they're actually finally starting to understand themselves?
Well, they're just spending more time with each other, that they're only hurting each other and no one else.
I think that you're right, Alan. Yeah. I think you've touched on something there because I think that they're certainly still struggling, but this is a series about self-awareness and about learning who you are and becoming who you are. And I think that especially Shelley, but certainly Ali, Moira, even
Amy's,
Sarah.
I think the character, the older sister.
To a lesser extent. Well, Josh grapples as well. I think they're all learning slowly who they are. And the wonderful thing about TV when you get so many episodes, and now we have four seasons worth of episodes, is you really see the progression. Mm. You really see the struggle. And you really start seeing these characters slowly accepting who they are. And in fact, that's something Judith Light, Shelley Pfefferman's, that's something Judith Light has talked about, how this is really a season about becoming your true self and how, in fact, it's Moira's transformation and Moira's journey which impels all of the other journeys in the series.
You're watching a human being who has closed herself off, shut herself down, not been able to find her voice, very awkwardly moving through the world now for the first time without a man in her life to work to find herself and the continuation of that voice. Now, of course, she does it very clumsily and not in the most advantageous way to herself nor to her son, but she's finding her way, which has been kicked off by Maura's moving in the direction that she has moved in. And I think Shelley sees that and sees what it's like to become one's true self, and she wants that.
That was Judith Light talking about the character evolvement of Shelley Pfefferman and indeed the evolution of all of the characters in this program. The program is Transparent. We're celebrating it tonight on Outtakes. More on Transparent coming up right after this.
You can find more Joycast and show blogs. Go to joy.org.au.
I'm sorry, what?
A brain anomaly.
What's happening, Mom?
Back up, ma'am.
What's going on? Why are you hassling her?
I have a groin anomaly.
I have to pat you down.
Okay. Whatever you people are doing,
I'm recording it.
Ma'am, you can put that away.
I'm not going to put it away, and please don't call me ma'am.
Shh. Ma'am, I have to pat you down.
Ma'am, may I talk to you? I'm trans. Do you understand what that is? And I have a penis.
Oh, then we're going to need a male agent. Mac?
Yeah.
Hi, Matt.
I can't pat her down. You need to pat her down.
I can't pat her down. She's got a penis.
Well, she's a woman, right?
Well,
you know, I don't mind.
What is going on?
Sorry, just give us 1 minute.
No, I would like to know what's going on with my mother.
Oh, ma'am, you need to back up and give us some space.
This is because she's trans? Aren't you people trained in this?
Please turn off.
I'm sorry.
No.
I'm just, please pat me down.
Hold on 1 moment, ma'am. Can I get a supervisor over here?
Please put your hand down. I have every right to film this.
Hi.
What's the situation?
Here's the situation. I'm trans. I have a penis. Pat me down. All right? If you want me to be a man, to pat me down, I'll be a man. If you want me to be a woman, I'll be a woman. If you want me to be a fucking chicken, I'll be a chicken.
Yeah, you're going to have to pat her down. Just make sure to get high on the thigh.
Okay.
Lord, mercy.
That was a clip from season 4 of Transparent, the brand new season, which is now available. And I mean, that is classic Transparent.
It is. That's a crescendo pretty much of the day-to-day experience that trans people must have in society. This ignorance of understanding what trans is all about and how people deal with that.
But also that scene, and we were just talking about it as it was playing, they get the pronoun right.
Yes.
The behaviour completely.
It's very matter of fact.
Yeah.
There's something very matter of fact about that scene. And what I particularly like about that scene is that in season 1, Moira would have had a breakdown.
Yeah.
And in season 4, she takes ownership, doesn't she? She owns the scene and it doesn't, we don't see it phase her. If it does, we don't see that.
Yeah.
She is so much stronger in this season. And she, we get a sense, and you hear it in that scene. She knows who she is.
Oh, you see it in the first moment we see Moira leading a lecture in the season, the confidence exuding out of that character. Mm. We know it's a new woman that we're seeing. And it's really now the story of the rest of the family and their journey. And Moira really does take a back seat. I mean, it's her taking them overseas.
Well,
and
we do get to see her explore her sexuality.
Her own sexuality, yeah.
Which is interesting.
Yeah.
But we've seen her explore her sexuality in past seasons as well.
With Angelica Houston's character.
That was an amazing storyline.
Yeah.
But, I mean, that's another feature of this series that we haven't really talked about yet. The fact that they do all go overseas together to Israel, where there are some family secrets exposed.
Just a couple.
And I love that Israel here functions as a metonym for other issues which are discussed throughout all 4 series. This, we were talking before about the idea of boundaries and barriers, and there's the series takes a very political approach to Israel,
doesn't it?
And the Israel-Palestinian conflict, and presents it in a very kind of dichotomous way. There are two sides, and there's a wall between the two sides, and it uses that metonym as a way to explore other binaries, things like gender, the binary between male and female, sexuality.
The scene at the Wailing Wall.
Mm.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing. I don't want to spoil too much, but I think Ali takes us on that journey to show the opposing side. So that's probably the best part of Ali's character in this whole season, is presenting that different political view and within a family, and how they can have these opposing views.
And what I love about that is that it makes the personal political and the political personal.
Yeah.
And that's what, and Transparent has always been political.
It has, yeah. And I think Ali really amps that up in this episode. We do see a lot of political commentary from her, in particular when you see the family go to visit a woman in a settlement. And I think that really winds her up, and she just cannot bear that, and so she has to flee.
And going through checkpoints.
And so I think we really do get a really good understanding. I think they try to give us a good understanding of the political situation in Israel at the moment, with that dichotomy between Palestinian and Israeli.
But you see, there was, I mean, the Pfeffermans have always been a Jewish family, and Judaism has always been explored in this series, which as a Jewish gay man, watching it has been really interesting because, Gina, you often talk about experiences as a Greek, watching Greek representation and how rare it is, and it's the same for kind of Jewish gay representation.
Can I say then, the soundtrack that matches this, Jesus Christ Superstar.
Is that
explain,
true?
Daniel.
What's that about?
Well, help me here.
I was a bit baffled by the use of that soundtrack in the series because I think the series always incorporates a really eclectic mix of really interesting music.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it does so this season too. But as you rightly say, part of it is the soundtrack to Jesus Christ Superstar.
And they sing along and they really embrace. Like, you know, I kind of love that quirkiness.
Yeah, takes us right back to Neil Patrick Harris's Tony opening. It's not just for gays and Jews anymore, Broadway. Maybe that's the link. I don't know. But I think the series is always, you know, we were talking about intersectionality before. Yeah. Well, one of the intersections that the series has always explored, and indeed a rabbi was a very prominent character in the series, a female rabbi. But one of the intersections it's always explored is the intersection between faith and sexuality. And in this season, it amps that up by exploring not just the intersection between faith and sexuality, but the intersection between nationality, race, faith, and sexuality. And it puts all of these issues into a pressure cooker. And I was sitting there thinking, why has Jill Soloway decided to do this? And I really do think, ultimately, that it is about the way that the political situation in Israel acts as a metonym for these broader dichotomies that are so profuse in our language and that provide a lot of the tension in this story. So, again, the divide between man and woman, the divide between gay and straight, sexually diverse and straight. Mm. And all of the characters are positioned somewhere in this very dichotomous spectrum. Mm. None of them fall on really one side or the other, I don't think.
In terms of sexuality or gender?
In terms of everything.
Everything, right.
They're all, that's what makes them so rich and so real. They're all neither this or that, but somewhere between, I think.
That's mainly the children and Moira. Because Shelley is pretty much, she's a straight-laced gal.
I wouldn't say that. I wouldn't say that at all.
I think she's a few Shirley Temples away from an experimental evening. You know, after a night of a bit of performance art.
You're talking from experience there, Jenny?
No,
Personal experience?
I was kind of hoping in that, what was that last song she sang to Shell and back that performance in the end of season three?
Magical moment.
Alanis Morissette. Yeah. That, you know, she pashed a chick at the end of it, but no.
Yeah.
No, I think there's a lot more to come from her.
From Shelley?
Yeah.
Mm. The Shelley Pfeffermann spin-off. No, but look, the series has always been very political. So not just in its look at political issues, but also I think the writers of this series put out a statement just recently, right before the premiere of the series, in relation to some of the things that were happening in the US.
Well, you're talking about the Trump military ban on trans people in the US military.
I was wondering if you were going to catch on.
I caught the ball.
That was a segue. I threw it to you 5 minutes ago.
Did you?
Did you? Totally missed it.
Look, Gina missed that one too. That definitely flew over the head. But I guess when Trump came out with his tweets a number of months ago, the producers of Transparent put out a press release, basically sort of expressing solidarity with the trans community. And it sort of went along these lines. It said that at Transparent, we tap into the incredible history of survival the trans community has achieved against all odds, and knowing that the fight is noble and on the side of justice and human rights. And they said that the trans community members serving in the military and to transgender veterans, they said, we work in solidarity with you and we will continue fighting and creating art for our community's well-being and future. Which I think showed real true leadership and care for the trans community.
Well, this is what Jeffrey Tambor, who plays Moira, had to say.
I'm totally opposed to it. It makes me drive a little faster to Paramount Studio to get our work done, because enough of this nonsense. These are people who are defending the country and need to be respected. And I I just don't agree, nor would Maura. Maura would be furious, so both Maura and I are furious.
And it's not surprising to see this response come from Transparent and come from the cast, remembering that Jill Soloway created this. This is 2014. It's not that long ago, but this was actually inspired because Jill Soloway's father also came out as trans.
Yeah.
So that's what inspired the story. So when Jill comes to this project, she comes to it from a very different place than just, you know, telling it, you know, to, you know, trying to entertain an audience. This is a personal story.
I'm
pretty sure Ali is Jill. When you sort of see some of the
I think you're right.
And that's why I don't want to dislike Ali as much as a character, because I think Jill's amazing as a filmmaker, just an amazing storyteller and creative, bringing together an amazing team.
And this is just another way that the series makes the personal political and the political personal. And tapping into what you're... what you've been talking about, Gina, I think that Transparent has been a game changer.
Huge.
It has changed the way we look at and talk about and think about trans representation.
I think it kind of came at a time that other projects kind of came in and around it. We've seen Laverne Cox from Orange is the New Black, which is 2015, 2016. But Transparent really set the bar. And it set the bar because it's such brilliant script writing. It's such brilliant casting. It's such a great project. Had it not been as good as it is,
it makes a real point of incorporating trans people into the cast, into the crew.
Yes.
It consults the trans community when it develops its scripts, and it has a real point of view.
Yeah.
And just as the characters are real and authentic,
responsible filmmaking.
Yeah.
And you know what? In this season, we actually start to learn a bit more about the other trans characters in this series, and I think in particular we get to see some of the backstory for Davina, who was Maura's roommate, and I think there was a very confronting scene where we see some nudity of a trans person on screen, and I think for the general viewing population that are watching trans, they might find this a little bit challenging and or confronting, and I think this is making it political,
because there's nothing challenging about seeing Amy Landecker naked on screen or indeed Gabby Hoffman naked. The only thing challenging about that is that we need to see it so often.
About Transparent, Daniel, you and I were saying this earlier, we have grown and learned and been stretched as an audience as to what we, you know, where we started and to where we are now, that we can accept, and we expect that of the audience to be, you know, far more, I don't know, more aware in this space, because they've taken us there and they've pushed us to go there.
Yeah.
So seeing that scene didn't, you know, none of us should be flinching if we are their audience.
Yeah, that's right.
Absolutely not.
I mean, I wasn't flinching, but I could see how some people would sort of react
but
to
Alan,
that,
that's
sort of be surprised.
Yeah, but that's precisely,
because I think it challenges some of the stereotypes around trans women.
That's precisely why it's such an important scene.
I agree.
That's precisely why it's in there.
Precisely.
That scene was actually, if you think about it, quite superfluous in terms of the actual plot. It didn't drive the plot forward at all. But what it did was start a conversation, the kind that you're having now.
Precisely.
And that's what Transparent has always done. Mm. So we're kind of shifting gears now.
Yes.
We're talking more about the kind of political effect that Transparent has and the way that it has reshaped and refocused discussions about trans lives and trans issues and trans representation. But that's not a conversation that we're really qualified to have, which is why after this we're speaking with Jake Graff. Now, Gina, I know that you're a Jake Graff fangirl.
I am a fangirl. And look, I stumbled onto Jake's work because we had a short film in festivals that started following each other. And our films sort of, you know, and you go, you start to learn about the other filmmakers when your film starts to sit into the same sort of package. And that's when I looked up Jake and realised Jake is a trans man who is not only an actor but a writer and a director, so a great all-round filmmaker.
Mm-hmm.
And started watching some of the short films that Jake's made online, And telling a story, a narrative I've not seen before. So I was really impressed with Jake's work.
And Jake was particularly open when he sat down with us as well. So our chat with Jake is coming up, plus more on Transparent right after this.
This Joycast is a free service brought to you by Joy 94.9. Support Joy 94.9 by becoming a member at joy.org.au.
You are listening to Outtakes, the home of queer cinema on Joy 94.9, and this evening the home of queer TV. We're delving into Transparent and looking at the conversations that it started about trans representation on screen. That was The Temple from Jesus Christ Superstar, which has a very prominent place in the fourth season of Transparent.
That's after the groin anomaly. That's where this one plays.
That's true. That's true. Where it plays.
And that's a scene at the temple where Jesus overturns all the money lenders' tables because he's horrified at this desecration of the temple. And I think that's why I think that plays really well with that particular scene, because Moira was being desecrated with disrespect of those guards, you know, the security guards.
Yeah.
At the airport. A plus, Alan.
Do you think so?
Yeah.
Do you like that
one? I'll
go with
that. A plus.
Listen, you know, brought it. There was a bit of intersectionality. That's an A double plus for that one.
Love it. Absolutely love it. But, yes, we have had the opportunity to speak to Jake Graff, who I'm a fan of Jake's work, and I highly recommend. He's made a lot of short films that you can easily get online. So go and look at Brace. It's quite an impressive piece of work. Jake is a filmmaker who not only has made short films but has sat in and assisted in casting roles such as Danish Girl, and sat on as one of the kind of, you know, sort of people assisting in that film and given their feedback. So we were asking, well, I think we started off with Jake, we're kind of asking what Jake was up to, because they do so. Jake does that much.
Well, this is what Jake had to say.
Yeah.
We just shot the newest short film, which is called Dusk. It's sort of a little bit of a follow-on from Dawn, but the story, the narrative is completely different. So I've been working on Dusk this morning. Just this morning, actually, I was on the phone to my composer working through the final scene and the music on that. So there's Dusk, and then I've just been working on an eight-part web series called Spectrum, which is all set in London and, you know, very diverse, very inclusive, and lots of trans characters, gay characters, lots of people of colour, just to sort of make it as inclusive as possible. And the aim with that was really just to sort of normalise the queer experience.
I'm fascinated to hear, Jake, that you're working on a web series, because it seems to me, and this is something that's come up on Outtakes a number of times before, but it really is in web series, also short films, but some of those shorter form mediums, that a lot of more, I think, progressive issues are getting airtime. Is that your experience?
Absolutely. I mean, obviously, you know, all sort of television channels do have a very strict kind of monitoring body above them, whereas, you know, when it goes online, I think obviously people feel much more free to just tell these stories without any kind of shackles, without any kind of limitations. You know, obviously Orange is the New Black gets away with a lot more being on something like Netflix than I think it ever would on terrestrial television. So, you know, it does seem to be kind of the way ahead.
Do you think that says something about where mainstream audiences still are? Perhaps they're not in the place we'd like them to be?
Yeah, I think that there's obviously always, you know, for the sort of bigger mainstream audiences, anything has to be, I guess, monitored. I know, for instance, you know, my mum and her kind of demographic would never turn on to Netflix or Amazon or, you know, check out a web series, because obviously it's just not something they'd even consider. But, you know, I think so long as we're reaching the new generation and the younger generation, and it's those perspectives that are getting changed by what they're seeing online, then I think, you know, that's sort of, you know, where the growth and where the change will happen.
Jake, the reason we've probably brought you in as our wonderful expert is because you don't just act. You write, you direct, you produce, you're involved in casting. Your short films that you've made have almost all made it into the Iris Prize. Congratulations.
Thank you.
You've been in over 100 film festivals worldwide. So when we wanted to look at somebody to talk to us through the representation of trans, not only trans actors and performers and writers in film, but their stories as well in film. And I'd like to know from your perspective, where have we kind of come? Was it that we were just looking at trans characters, or we were looking at trans writers and performers?
I think, you know, to be honest, it's, you know, a decade in with regards to how the trans sort of, you know, visibility and understanding and acceptance has leapt forward. I think, you know, even a decade is a huge amount. Even if you go back 5 years, you know, things have changed hugely in the last 5 years. When I watch programs that 5 years ago I would have watched that just had, for instance, you know, something like Law and Order that would have just had a transgender character, and I would have thought, wow, how groundbreaking that they're even touching upon a trans, you know, anyone trans or any sort of trans storyline. You know, the representation even back then was, now I would say, sort of archaic and very uninformed and very very prejudicial and very sort of bigoted. And you know, I think what's happened in the last 5 years, the evolution has almost been like, you know, the sort of gay rights movement, but kind of on speed. It's ridiculous how quickly things have moved on and how sort of, you know, perceptions have broadened. You know, when I was growing up, the only film I really saw with anyone trans in, I think, was something like Boys Don't Cry.
Yes.
And obviously, you know, that was the most, you know, I cannot imagine anything more upsetting for a young trans guy sort of trying to find his way in the world and, you know, figure out who he was and where he belonged than seeing Boys Don't Cry as your sort of first kind of, you know, baptism into this world. It was, so that was all pretty upsetting. But I mean, you know, since then, obviously, we've got beautiful films like The Danish Girl, and things like, for instance, Transparent, which are kind of, you know, really pushing forward that narrative. Yeah. And I think, you know, there was that tipping point, certainly when Laverne Cox sort of came out, and there was, you know, Orange is the New Black, and then obviously Caitlyn Jenner and so on. But I think, you know, if you go back, as I say, even so far as 5 years, things were pretty dark. And we know, we were either the butt of the joke, or we were the body on the gurney, or we were the kind of freak walking down the street. And it just, you know, it wasn't good. None of it was good.
Jake, you've touched there on some productions that I think Gina and I both want to come back to in a moment. But
absolutely,
if I can just take us back a step first, when we talk about trans representation, what exactly is it that we're talking about? Are we talking about the importance of having trans people involved in stories about trans people? Or are we talking about the representation of trans issues? Or are we talking about both? What exactly is it that we're talking about?
Well, I think it's a bit of everything. You know, obviously it's very important to see trans people on screen, hopefully living more and more normalised lives, and, you know, being represented as more sort of normal. And I guess, you know, mainstream, I think, you know, to be realistic, there are too few of us out there. I think it's something like 1 in 1,000 for transgender people to ever be completely mainstream. I think it's always going to be niche. But, you know, obviously when I was growing up, there was no one trans on screen, which makes for a very isolating experience. And I think, you know, the more visibility and the more representation, not just of trans issues being addressed on screen, but, you know, if you're talking about films and television and so on, it's really important that we're seeing these people like me, or like, you know, my girlfriend who also happens to be trans, or like, you know, any other number of the people on the trans spectrum, non-binary, non-gender, non-conforming, you know, all these different people that, because you're not seeing them on screen, they hold this sort of almost mythical, alien, this is what makes people nervous, because they're not seeing enough of us to just know that we're just like you or your mother or your father or your neighbour walking down the street.
That was Jake Graff talking about the importance of trans representation, and indeed the way that the conversation has changed in just a few years.
And I think it's a great way that it's changed, because it should no longer be acceptable, especially in a high-budget Hollywood film or TV series, that they can turn around and say, oh, there's just no trans actors anymore, because we know that's farcical. We know that that's no longer the reason you can't cast a trans person in a film. That's lazy, you know, casting and producing on that side. It is harder for smaller productions, and we appreciate that, but on big scale productions where a trans person can be cast, there is no excuse that doesn't happen. They need representation. You know, we all need representation.
You know, Gina, I agree with
you. Trans lives matter.
I agree with you, but the same thing can be said for gay and lesbian representation. I mean, we see plenty of the A-lister Hollywood actors who play gay for pay.
Mm-hmm.
And why can't we have gay and lesbian actors playing those same roles? So it's the same thing. So I think it's across the community.
This is the point that I think Jake makes, and I think it's a really solid point. The point is that if we say that only trans people should be able to play trans people and only gay people should be able to play gay people, are we saying that only straight people should be able to play straight people? Because someone like Jake, who is a good actor, deserves to play a straight man.
Daniel, it's time for a double standard. Really? I'm being a provocateur, but seriously, why can't we have
people
that?
When they are cast, and this is a conversation that Hollywood has very often in terms of gay actors, and it needs to have in terms of trans actors, but you're not your sexuality, you're not your gender necessarily when you're being cast in a production. You're just not. So the conversation kind of needs to transcend conversation about locking people into roles based on sexuality or gender and traits like that.
Look, we know there was a massive controversy recently with Jen Richards, who I adore. I love Jen Richards from her story, and that was one of the first web series to be nominated for an Emmy in the last 2 years. But Jen Richards, we know the Mark Ruffalo kind of controversy. We've touched on it here before. But Jen Richard recently has come out and said she's missing out on roles because she passes too much as a female now, which she says is both a good and bad thing. But, you know, I love that we can have these conversations, and people should be having these conversations, but not where we were a decade ago.
We are talking about transparent and the kind of space that it has opened up for conversation in relation to trans stories on screen and trans representation more broadly. You are listening to Outtakes on Joy 94.9.
Joy 94.9 is a GLBTIQ community radio station in Melbourne, Australia. Support Joy 94.9 by becoming a member at joy.org.au.
I'm learning things. You can just start again. And you never look back.
Try not to get worried. Try not to turn on to problems that upset you. Don't you know?
You're a boundary pusher.
I have no idea what boundaries are.
And we want you to sleep well tonight.
Have you lost count of your sexual partners?
Let the world turn without you tonight.
Next question. Don't remember
moving
names.
On.
Everything's all right, yes, everything's fine.
My family lies a lot because everyone's like in everybody's stuff, so you tell a lie and you can have some privacy.
Close your eyes and relax, think of nothing.
I'm going to Israel.
I feel like my body's screaming at me. You're in the wrong place. Whoa, hey, what
the fuck? Excuse us.
Excuse us. It's like an Orthodox Jewish Disneyland.
They say in Hebrew, you only have one mother.
We kind of have more than one.
I'm dating.
That's cool. What's her name?
Donald.
You are listening to Outtakes, the home of queer cinema on Joy 94.9. That was the trailer for season 4 of Transparent, which is now available online. And I love that line where Moira is in the desert and says, I'm here. Because, yes, Moira has arrived, and we heard that in the clip that we played earlier at the airport where she says, you know, I'll be what she takes ownership of the moment, where earlier in season 1 or 2 she would have run away. She has arrived and she knows it. But the other reason I love it is because I'm here is precisely what Abraham says in the scriptures.
Got to help me there. I've been failing.
It's a biblical line. Hineni is the Hebrew. Hineni, here I am. So,
in relation to what, Daniel? What was that all about? Is this about? Is he talking to God saying, "Here I am"?
So. And also, it's about spiritual ascension. It's about rising up, and that's what Jews believe, that when you go to Israel, you make Aliyah, which literally means to rise up. And that is what Moira is doing in this series. That is what the Pfefferman family is doing in this series. They are rising up. They are becoming transparent. They are becoming who they really are and who they're meant to be.
So I love that.
Are they transcending? Is this a transcension more than a transparency? Sorry, Gina.
I think it's a transparency.
See? Yeah.
But this is the thing we were talking about earlier, when I see my culture, my Greek culture and Orthodox culture on screen, and how, and rarely does it represent me. You seen that in that scene, whereas I didn't.
It stands as a powerful line on its own, but it is tapping in to the scriptures, and the series does that. It takes us to Israel, and actually I have to use the opportunity to plug our Israel film podcast. So we did an episode on Israel and Israeli queer film last year. That podcast is available online. We also did a podcast on trans representation in film around the time that The Danish Girl came out. That podcast is available online as well.
And you had Michelle Shepherd join you. Yeah.
Joy's Own. And also Sally Goldner from, the Victorian Trans Peak Body. Their name escapes me. If you know it, message in 0427JOY949. Let us know. You can also let us know who your favourite Pfefferman character is, what your favourite moment in the four seasons that we now have of Transparent is. And
Alan's got one. He's got a quiz he wants to ask us later, but we're still a bit shy,
Still trying to figure that out. But I think one of my favourite moments is when Sarah's husband actually admits to his Jew curiosity in the scenes. And when he's saying that line, I'm going, oh, my God, that's me. You know, working with Daniel this time, for these last couple of years, I mean, he's made me Jew curious, and it's fascinating actually seeing how this Jewish family actually operate. And
you just
and
have a fetish for Israeli men, don't you?
That is so not true, Daniel. You've been looking at my browser history again.
Well, the obsession and the jokes about Jesus and, you know, Mary Magdalene and all that sort of stuff amongst this season was what I found really entertaining. Yeah.
Well, there you go.
I found that really kind of fun. Like,
look, there's no doubt there's something for everyone. But bringing us back on track, we've been speaking with Jake Graff, who is a leading trans actor, writer, director,
producer, and casting, you name it.
Does everything. And does it really, really well, which is why we were so fascinated to hear what he thought about the space that Transparent has opened up for trans representation and the telling of real and authentic trans stories. And in fact, we were talking about The Danish Girl because Jake was very involved in making The Danish Girl.
You know, obviously for me, The Danish Girl is a film I hold very dear to my heart, being that I was on screen for 0.5 seconds. You know, Stephanie was my first feature film. Yeah, my mother's seen it twice. Tell where I am in the film, which is impressive. But no, I mean, you know, for me, obviously I was very heavily involved in the PR and the publicity campaign for that, because I was outspoken in that I believed Eddie was a great casting choice. Tom Hooper was a great directing choice. You know, for years we bemoaned the fact that we weren't seeing ourselves on screen in any sort of positive guise. And then when someone like Tom Hooper picked up this project that had been on the shelf for the best part of 12 years, He came on board, and obviously, you know, he and Eddie are very close and have worked together on Les Misérables. And they, you know, he brought Eddie along with him, bearing in mind, obviously, that Lily, for two-thirds of the film, presents as male anyway.
Yes.
I think it would have been really bizarre to have a woman played the whole way through. I mean, I don't know if you know, but originally I think it was Your Countrywoman, Nicole Kidman, who was cast in the role of Lily, which I think, you know, Nicole Kidman with a beard would have been really weird. So, you know, I think, for, you know, from my point of view and from what I've heard, you know, the demographic in the US of people watching this film were the over 45s because, you know, they'd seen Eddie in The Theory of Everything and thought, oh, well, let's go and see Eddie's new film. And whether or not they knew what they were sitting down to, they saw and they watched. And I heard, you know, from many, many friends in the US who'd come from, you know, small towns in middle America who said that, you know, mum and dad had gone to see this film and had actually picked up a phone after radio silence was sort of 5 or 10 years and called their trans child to say, you know, I actually now understand a little bit of what it is that you've gone through and who you are. And, you know, if a film like that with someone like Eddie at the helm can have that kind of reach, then I think, you know, who are we to moan and who are we to judge?
It touches on, you know, the importance of cinema, the importance of representation. And I think you're right, Jake, that it's really important sometimes for stories like the story in The Danish Girl, but also other trans stories to have a really big star attached. It's exactly what we saw, you know, 25 years ago with something like Philadelphia. If I can draw a really loose comparison. Having Tom Hanks play that role made some of the issues in the film accessible to audiences who would have closed their minds to it otherwise.
Absolutely. You know, from my point of view, I think it's a really dangerous road to tread to say that only trans actors can play trans roles, because then by the same token you have only gay actors can play gay roles, only straight actors can play straight roles, and then we're all very much in our little boxes again, very divided. And, you know, with the sort of huge dearth of trans roles out there, it really is very limiting for trans actors to say, no, you're trans, you get the trans roles. But, you know, there's no crossover. You're certainly not playing a cisgender role. And, you know, you gay actor, you are certainly not allowed to play a straight role by the same token. I think if you start doing that, it becomes very divisive, very alienating, very segregating. And, you know, this is not a road we want to tread. Surely acting is all about the best actor for the job.
When I looked at the Danish Girl's case study, the thought of having a trans actor detransition for that period of time, knowing that things are not shot sequentially, you've also done producing and casting. Is that something that you also consider when you're writing roles or assisting other people in casting?
I mean, you know, obviously for any, particularly the trans role, anything else, I guess it's a different thing. You know, for a gay actor to play a gay role or a gay actor to play a straight role, you're not obviously asking them, as you say, to kind of, you know, stop hormones or, you know, go back to a role that for them might be very painful.
Yeah,
I mean, Laverne Cox is very lucky in Orange is the New Black, because obviously she has a twin brother in real life. So in all her scenes where she presents as very male, she just wheels in the twin brother, who obviously still looks very male. You know, when you look at the sort of fairly well-known trans actors who are, I would say so far are maybe Alexandra Billings from Transparent or possibly Trace Lizette from Transparent, you know, they're still very, very few and far between. And none of these women would, I think, be convincing as men, you know, and that's just the way it is. I don't think Laverne Cox would be convincing as a man now. So I think, you know, it's sort of, it's a very double-edged, you know, it's a double-edged sword.
I'm so pleased to hear your, you know, ethos on casting in this space, because I have to admit, I was a little bit shocked at some of the online outpouring against Mark Ruffalo for his casting choice of Matt Bomer in the upcoming film Anything. There was some quite vitriolic comments posted. And Mark Ruffalo has been a longtime ally of the LGBT community, so I found that particularly unsavoury, and I wondered what your take on that was.
I mean, again, you know, the trans community, I guess there has to be, because obviously trans women are, you know, by far and large, far and wide, the most attacked and most abused and most vilified part of the entire LGBT spectrum. Obviously, you know, there is a hope for them that at some point trans women won't be seen as just men wearing makeup and heels and a wig.
Right.
And I think at the moment there is that. And I do understand that from the point of a lot of trans women within the community, like Jen Richards, who wrote her story and who's just got a part on Nashville. You know, she feels very strongly that it should only be trans women playing trans women roles, because when you see Eddie at the awards ceremony, and obviously, you know, he's without his makeup and without the sort of, you know, gowns and wigs and so on, it leads the mainstream audience to think, oh, well, you know, trans women are just basically women dressing as men. And obviously, you know, there is that which then carries over into this sort of unprecedented and unrivaled amount of violence against trans women. So, yeah. You know, again, it's a really difficult subject for me to comment upon because, yes. You know, obviously I try and cast trans as much as possible in trans roles, but then I'm very lucky in that I know a huge amount of trans actors. But, you know, by the same token, I'm not working with a budget of $30 million.
Exactly.
You know, I'm working with budgets of, you know, 20 quid. So, you know, so obviously there's a huge difference as to what I can do with my films, knowing that they're not going to make money and they're not expected to, compared to a big studio and Mark Ruffalo, who's obviously working as a producer and, you know, has bills to pay and has, you know, people to you know, investors to consider.
That was Jake Graff talking about the importance of trans representation, which is really a conversation that I think Transparent has kick-started.
And look, we need to celebrate our very own. We have a beautiful Evie from Melbourne will be starring in a little short film called First Day, which is premiering October 11th for United Nations International Day of the Girl. And Evie is a trans girl playing the role of a trans child starting high school for the first time.
Which is
amazing.
Something that we just wouldn't have
just
seen 5 years ago.
No, not at all. And that comes from ABC and Screen Australia. So check out the ABC platform.
Well, look, it's great to see that we're getting better at having these conversations and better at having real and authentic representation and real and authentic trans stories on our screens. And, you know, we've been saying it all night, but I really do think that Transparent has had a lot to do with that.
And you know what? We are going to take that as a comment, Daniel, and we totally agree. We agree with you. We agree with you on that.
Yeah.
I think it really is revolutionary, and especially when you saw Transparent and Jill Soloway win that very first Emmy and that speech that she gave at the Emmys, I think, wow, I mean, incredibly powerful.
Look, that's it for another episode of Outtakes.
Thank you for listening to a Joycast from Joy 94.9.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.